Good afternoon, everybody. I want to do something a little unorthodox. I want to do the third step prayer. So if everybody could help me with the third step prayer right now. Take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, and show me how to live. Thank you. That's what I needed to get myself started. This actually is my first time actually doing the workshop. And I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to actually understand that we do recover, and I don't do it by myself. I kind of would have to kind of begin my story. I mean, my story is like broken into a couple of pieces, because originally I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in 1995, and about somewhere between my ninth and going on my 10th year, I relapsed. I came back filled with humiliation. And really, if I really wanted to talk about, I know my topic is We Do Recover, but it really is about, for me, the humiliation of what it felt like when I first came in the program, and what it felt like after what everyone said would happen, you know, like how your disease picks up and how things kind of continue. My life was really a complete wreck. And actually, my using had me doing a whole bunch of things that I'm standing outside of a hospital, broad daylight with no clothes on. And that happened twice. The first time it was a hospital. The second time it was in front of a hotel, and the police were standing out in front of me, and they thought I had drugs on me. And so I knew I didn't have any underwear on, and I was like going through some kind of physical emotional thing. And I remember like pulling my pants down, trying to show them my ass, but there were people standing around, looking around, laughing at me. And that was kind of, you know, that happened all the time. Like I was in my relapse, I must have spent, I don't know, I went to every other hospital. You know what I mean? I was always in a hospital. I was, because that was my thing. I would use, and then something's wrong with me, and so I have to show up in a hospital. And so I would be in the hospital. And actually, in one of those situations, my groin had gotten the size of like two gigantic grapefruits. I had been using the whole time with a major abscess in my groin. And that wasn't why I went to the hospital. I went to the hospital because I felt like my heart was about to explode. And my heart rate was actually at 240. They actually had to run a code on me. And what they did was they allowed me to sort of sit in my urine, because they didn't give me a Foley. They were supposed to give me a catheter, but they didn't do that. And so I remember, peeing on myself in the hospital. And I didn't stop using either then. That was just one more bottom. So I really, like I said, initially I was introduced to the program through crack in 1995. And really, you know, for me, it's about how much denial I had with my disease, how unwilling I was able to work the program. I came in the program initially, and I did everything. I went to meetings. I got a sponsor. My sponsor had to be an attorney. You know, because there was this other guy, okay, I'm gay, and so the first guy I was going to ask, I wanted to sleep with, but I said, I can't do that. So I asked this other dude. He was an attorney, and his sister was in the program as well, and she was traveling all over the place sharing, and so I figured that's where I need to get my help. Even though I was completely unwilling, I did what they call the 1-2-3 shuffle, which I really wasn't doing the 1-2-3 shuffle. I just wasn't using. And I proceeded to just think that I needed to fix my outside. So I got real buffed and real muscular, and I was just looking the way I thought I was supposed to look to attract people. I was empty. I remember being so physically fit and so empty inside. And one of the ideas I had, stripping. So I decided clean. I had just got accepted to a university. I went from UDC to GW, and I had just gotten and I think I was trying to feel like I was doing the Players Club, you know, I was going to strip my way through school. But really, it was just me being sick and not doing any work. So I was stripping for a while in the program with like 8 years clean, you know. I was like, they got to pay for it, you know what I mean? Really sick, and really, really miserable inside. And because that stripping turned to tricking, and I mean like the hooker tricking, the kind where I had a website and pictures and you had to pay by the hour, and clean, like I'm still not using, and I'm still going to meetings, okay? I'm not working with a sponsor. Like, I wouldn't work on myself, but I was chairing meetings, and I had like about 8 years. So when I was chairing a meeting, I was in control. You know, I remember fighting with people in the home, you know, in a group, like, you know, because it had to be my way. I had no identification with what was really happening for me on the, like, my outsides looked this way, but my insides were just rotten to a core. And, you know, it wasn't until I crawled back into Narcotics Anonymous in 2006 and had to just really believe that there had to be another way, and that in spite of everything that happened prior to that situation, I knew that Narcotics Anonymous could help me if I gave it a chance. So, you know, I got me a sponsor, and I immediately got a home group. Now, home group I picked, I was in the basement. It was a horrible little basement. It had roaches. It's called Recovery Alley. And it was just like, yeah. But I felt so cruddy, and I felt so disgusted. I felt like that's where I needed to be. And one of the things that's really grateful for is that my home group, because when you talk about We Do Recover, I have to remind myself that the first time I had a home group is where I had to have my elaborate anniversaries. Because when I first got in the program, it was about how many speakers I can get, how much time they had, how good their story was, and what they were going to talk about, and how they were going to say how fabulous I was. So that's how I did home group. You know, like, and then I used to compare my anniversary with someone else in the program who came in with me, and then she would have, like, all these people, and I'd be like, oh, damn it. And then I'd have, like, a small group. But I wasn't working on shit, you know? And when you talk to me, I was giving you shade, like, I'm clean. What? You know, I go to school, I'm at GW, you know what I mean? I'm buffed. I mean, people are paying to sleep with me. I mean, just sick. So that was my home group the first time. This time I got a home group, and it was predominantly white, which was weird for me initially. Not that I don't love white people. I mean, I'm always around them. Matter of fact, I've always gone to, like, predominantly white schools. Like, my high school was mixed, and then my college was predominantly white, and I go in spaces where that's where I belong, but I don't feel like I belong, because I really never felt comfortable as a gay man around gay people. I don't like gay people. I don't like, you know, other people have shared this stuff. Like, I didn't like gay people, white people, black people, anybody. It was just like I was always putting myself where I was the one that was not really connected. Even with the little muscle queens I was hanging out with, you know, because I decided that that's my group, you know, so that's what I did. And it just really was just about my level of denial and my inability to really get help, needing help and not knowing how to get the help you need. And that's really like my relapse story really makes my recovery story much better, because I did exactly everything different the second time around. And that home group became my life source. Like, I can't tell you how, you know, I've developed relationship with heterosexual men, black and white, and I still have people, like, I'm going on 10 years, and I still have those bonds that mean everything to me, because it was like, you ever see, like, the lion with the you know, the thing in his paw, like the thorn? That's how I, like, they loved me, they took me to, I really ain't had no money, and I looked crazy, like, my hair was, like, way out the hair, and I was 3 sizes smaller than I am now. This is a little recovery stuff that I got going on. But back then, I was really, and I felt like less than anything. And they kept telling me to come back. They're like, you know, home group. You know, like, I don't even know if I made it my home group. They made it my home group. And I let them, because I didn't have anything else to do. And I didn't have anywhere else to go. And I was in service. And it really just proceeded, just allowing myself to be just a little open-minded allowed me to really begin to believe in the principles of honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. That's really, for me, how we recover is through each other. And I began to see that God spoke through everybody. If I was willing, if I was open, I could actually get some help. And for the first time in my life, I actually gave NA a chance. My relationship with my sponsor, I can't recover without a relationship with a sponsor. I remember the first time I called my sponsor, and I really liked it, because she also was a little, you know, she was working in the government. She had a license. I like people with visibility. They make me feel better if they got some shit going on. So my sponsor was like this big, because she was actually working for the mayor at that time. And that was what I thought I needed, but it's not about that. You know, what my sponsor gave, my sponsor has a lot of years in the program, and she told me that when I call her, it was about me, and I can call her anytime. You know, as a newcomer, I really was in so much emotional pain. I can't tell you how much degradation, what I did to my body, how many people I slept with, how many diseases. I'm already living with HIV. The first time I discovered I was HIV positive, I had like 60 days the first time. And so part of what my inability to kind of let go was that I had a lot of pain about being HIV positive with only 60 days the first time. And I never shared about it. And I remember even going into the clinic talking to them about how empty and how upset I just could not. I don't remember any emotional peace. And so using was like my life had been shit the whole time. My history is that I grew up in a household where I was abused as sexually. I was molested like when I was 3 years old, and I was molested repeatedly when I was like 12 by my school teacher, neighbors, and so. I was a bedwetter, which made it even better. I grew up, you know, in a household where we didn't get the bills paid, so the lights would be on, the water would be off, the lights or the water would be off. We would have like, we lived like we were in like this sort of wilderness. We were right in the city. We were right in the city, but in our house, there was like candles and lanterns, and my mother would be making shit on the pot. You know what I mean? We ate, and I remember one time we woke up, and it was like all this soot in our nose because the lantern gas had went out, so we had kerosene, and one time we had that industrial thing that they use with a big blower, and that's how we heated our house. I took hoe baths. That's how I grew up, with the hoe baths. And I don't know if you know what the hoe baths are. They're where you just rub the clean parts. But that's how I never took a bath. The bath never worked. There was all this just neglect. So, you know, when I got in the program, there was a lot of pain about my story. Because I had been abused, and I had abused myself. I used all kinds of drugs. And I came in here so broken, but it was emotionally broken. I mean, physically, I looked okay, and I've always been able to pass that off. Like, I'm grateful that I can sometimes put it together, but emotionally, what I think about the program and what it's given me to recover is the work I've done on the inside. Because that's the stuff for me that has changed the way I see the world. My whole perspective has changed. And it's not me, it's been my home group, it's been service, it's been people in Narcotics Anonymous. We were listening to Doreen P. on the way down here, and she was singing Nobody But You, and Ain't Nobody But You. And I've been singing that song in my head the whole weekend, because it's just something that centers me. It's about knowing that the program has given me something that I can't give myself. And to me, We Do Recover is about me allowing someone to help me. And I need help. There's not a day go by that I'm not really in need of something, because I just don't know how to do it. My disease tells me that it's my weight. No, it's not my weight. It's my house. No, it's my finances. You know, I've been given so many gifts in the program. Being in a healthy relationship with someone for the very first time in my entire life. I'll be 49 in a few months, and I am grateful that I have a partner who's an earth person. You know, like, he ain't even in the program, and he drove down with a van full of addicts. He's in a car driving. He's not in the program. We had him listening to the tapes, and he has just been willing to show up in a way that I never had anybody care for me before. So to have someone care for me, it's like my higher power has listened to things about, I just didn't know my higher power was listening to me and giving me I never dreamed that I could live the way I'm living and not feeling the same level of pain. You know, I don't have any pain anymore. I'm not in that state of constant depression. And it's not been me. It's just been what this program does for me. I can't tell you. It's like, every day there's these moments where I'm like, my sponsors will call me and they'll give me some help. They think I'm helping them, but sometimes they relate. Having one addict helping another without parallel is still the most important thing to me. And the sponsors that I have now don't know that they give me that, because I can't give something I don't have. And I'm like tripping half the time, because I be wanting to tell them what I'm thinking. But what happens is that the program shows up, and I tell them what the program says, not what Dana wants you to do. I'm like, this is, and everything comes from what my sponsor gave me. My sponsor has given me so much freedom. She gave me my higher power. You know, I grew up a sanctified, Holy Ghost filled, fire baptized person. That's what I did. Didn't really work for me, you know, but I was preaching at 14. And, but when I came back in the program, I knew that I had to find a God of my understanding that was loving and compassionate. And I heard this shit before the first time. But this time I was like, I really got to find me a God of my understanding. Because I don't want to be outside butterball naked in broad daylight. You know, I don't want to continue to live. I mean, like, I slept with knives under my bed when I was using. I never had a clue. It's like, when I relapsed, I lost my mind, and I only maybe got it back maybe 2 years ago. I might have time, but it took a long time for me to recover. Because I have some layers and layers of denial and inability to get honest and get to the exact nature. All the shit we learn in here, it's not easy. I'll be like, oh hell no, I can buy something. I can do something else. And now that I'm like in my 40s, I don't sex to my feel I'm in a healthy relationship. I'm like, you know, we may do that maybe once or twice. It's not as often as I thought I was supposed to do it. But what I've come to realize is that you can have a relationship built on companionship, and y'all can actually be there for each other and support one another and hug and just be there and be present. It's been a gift that I never thought I could have. I'm a hooker slash hoe. I have been sleeping with so many people. I can't even tell you how many people it's been. It was a lot. And, you know, it's okay because I'm not that person today. I'm who I am right now. And right now it's just been one, and it's been one for a long time. And, you know, I'm very grateful about having a healthy relationship. I finally graduated from school. I went to GW. I thought that being educated would make me feel better. It didn't. Right. But I'm grateful to have that. But the thing is that it's because I've learned over the time that it really is an inside job. It is really about showing up, letting people help you, asking for help on a regular basis, because I'm never going to not need it. And I'm grateful that I have a home group. I always think about my home group. The first time it was like right around my first year when I was about to celebrate. I was 40 years old. I was turning 40. And somebody was in my life, and they were riding me like crazy. And back then, I had no program. I couldn't tell them, like, you need to back the fuck up and stop. You know, but I went to my home group, and I remember crying like, oh, and it was so beautiful. Let me tell you, it really changed the way. That became my home group. Now, I don't know what they thought, but in that moment, I was like, I'm sobbing, I'm crying around a bunch of white people, around a bunch of people I don't know like that. And that allowed me to be that vulnerable, gave me an opportunity to just think. I was still practicing unsafe sex. I was HIV positive. I used to go in that meeting talking about how I'm not doing, I couldn't believe I was actually out there saying, well, I'm HIV positive, I'm not having sex. Right. You know what I mean? Like, you don't do that. So I did that, but they gradually heard me talk about being in a healthy relationship with someone who's negative. Like, I went from doing this to doing that. And I didn't do that on my own. It was just through the process of allowing the program, because you have to talk about it. You got to tell on your disease. And I had to tell on my disease to get some help. And that's the way I've recovered. And every time I take that risk and I'm getting honest, and it's almost like it's in the first step. The help begins for addict when we can admit complete defeat. I've got to do it all the time because I'm always in that position. And I also don't like doing it. I don't like admitting that. I like to eat. Right now, it's the can. It's sugar. It's anything that makes me, you know, because I don't use. So it's like sugar. So, or shopping. You know, those are the things that I'm struggling with now that I know that I need to surrender. And I just know, but I'm not using. I got to give myself something. And I'm still struggling with that. But what I've learned is the more I've been able to trust in the faith and the hope that I have, that narcotics, I have the experience now. I get to live differently because I've lived differently in this program. And the funny thing is, what's cool about it is that having almost 10 years before and having almost 10 years now and being able to look and see, well, I don't know what the hell I was doing before, and just know that that's not the program I want to have. You know, because I'm not judging anybody. And it took a while, like even when I was doing my step work with my sponsor, and she was talking to me about being judgmental, and she said, you need to put that on there. And I was like, what's she talking about? And it wasn't until I actually worked through some things, like, oh, it isn't my way or the highway. It isn't all about me. I have to allow people to live their lives without any control, because I felt like, you know, you weren't doing that service commitment right. You need to do this. You need to do that. And I was like, wait a minute. You know, who am I? You know what I mean? I'm just one suffering addict. You know, my sponsor says I'm just one of the bozos on the bus, just trying to get better one day at a time. And what I've, like I said, what I've learned is that that was something I needed to work through. And actually what happened was, I was talking to a sponsor and they were being very judgmental. And I was like, oh, you're being judgmental. And what I realized is that I could relate to them, but I'd also move beyond that space, that I was willing to let people be where they were. And I remember, like, oh my God, what an epiphany. Like, I didn't know I had that defect. And that's the reality, is I don't always know what my defects are. I need to come in Narcotics Anonymous to help me. Because really for me, the program has been about learning about how to be a better, I just wanted to feel better. I want to be in a better space. I can't control the world, and it's okay. You know, regardless of how, I'm still going through a lot of stuff. Like, I have been dealing with fear. I mean, the kind of fear that I've been carrying with me the whole life. And I remember going in to see my therapist, and I was like, this is the core belief I have, is that I'm broken and that I'm unable to be fixed. And I remember being, because I've been carrying that with me for a while, and I ain't tell nobody. Like, I was still showing up, but I felt like you need to hear the good stuff. You didn't need to hear what I was really feeling. And so I finally came clean about that, and it's been a process of just really knowing that that's a lie. But I had to talk about it first. And recently I discovered that my father recorded a whole lot of music in the industry, in the 50s. And it's like he made amends to me in a way that I was just blown away, because he just made me feel a little bit more whole, knowing that he had recorded some music, he was successful, he had records on the charts. This is in the 1950s in Buffalo, New York. I actually found a book online that I bought that there's a chapter dedicated to his work. And this was weird because he was a bum. When I died, when he died in 93, he was a complete bum. He was living in a house, he had a stroke, and they didn't find his body for like a week later. And what I could see was the man, and I could actually it was weird. It's really weird how the program gives me gifts all the time, because I looked at him as a man. And then I could see him in the relationship and his disease of anxiety and how his disease took over his life. And it just gave me a different perspective. And I could forgive him, and I could be made whole by something that I just never had dreamed it would do that. You know, now I'm walking around telling everybody, my daddy, I got the records because they got old 45. So I ordered them online, and I'm trying to get the, but I'm like so proud about, you know, that experience, that it helped me. And that's just the way that my higher power continues to kind of show me how to live one day at a time. And that is really all I have. Thank you for letting me share.